Right now it's time for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven.
If I knew you were coming, I'd have baked a cake, baked a cake, baked a cake. If I knew you were coming, I'd have baked a cake. How'd you do? How'd you do? How'd you do?
All right, sounds like you could do with cake there too this morning, Arthur.
Well, we have cake, a lot of cake in the house. I'm in my nephew's house, and his little two-year-old had a birthday on Saturday, and we had this amazing cake shaped like her favorite stuffed toy. It was called Foxy. My nephew thought it was going to be a sheet cake with an outline of Foxy on it. It ended up to be an entire fox head.
Where'd he get it?
A bakery here.
Okay.
I don't know where. At a bakery. He had to have, it's custom made, obviously.
Right, because I was just thinking.
Pardon me?
I was just thinking how great they are, considering they're physicians, et cetera, if they could make a fox head cake in their spare time.
The fox head cake that was so lifelike, or at least it looked so much like the stuffed animal, that Maya, the two-year-old, wanted to pet it. And after she did get her hands into it, and her hand got full of buttercream, which she somehow, instead of crying, which she would normally do if she got her hand full of something, she knew enough to lick it off.
I think that's a natural, just like knowing where your mother is. I think that's a natural buttercream mouth, yes.
Yeah, well, whatever. Orange buttercream. Of course, because it's Foxy. Oh. So here I am, surrounded by a four-year-old and a two-year-old. The four-year-old is now making faces at me because she's wondering, what is he doing? Is that what you're doing, Sid? Yes, she said yes.
Okay. Well,
and yesterday we made chocolate pudding together, and she did all the stirring and the measuring. The only thing that she... Well, really, there was nothing she couldn't do for chocolate pudding. and you know what's amazing about making chocolate pudding is that the whole chocolate in milk starts looking brown, and then it's like magic, you know. All of a sudden, from white milk, it's brown chocolate pudding. She was fascinated with that, and I knew she would be. I think I gave the recipe a few weeks ago for chocolate pudding. The day we were talking about chocolate.
You did.
Is that possible?
It is possible.
Okay, so I won't do it again. But here's the deal. Last week, we were talking about Cobb salad, and you did a search, and you found my website recipe for Cobb salad and the explanation of Cobb, you know, where it came from, blah, blah, blah. And I said to you at the time, I don't have a website anymore. Well, I didn't know because I never look. I did know that right after canceled the website, and actually I sold the name, the Food Maven, to a company in Colorado that, don't ask, but they paid me a nice penny for it. And I had a lot of trouble. There was no way to update the site anymore. It's so old. It's a 20-year-old website, and 20 years ago, in the infancy of the internet, it was devised with software that doesn't exist anymore and that nobody knows how to manipulate anymore. So anyway, what you found, Jill, was my hacked website.
Oh, really?
This is not, it has, I looked at it this morning, and it has some material that is mine, in my voice, and then it has a lot of material that is not mine, not in my voice. I don't know where it came from, but I noted this morning, for instance, because we're going to be, with the girls, I'm going to be making mac and cheese later today, you know, from scratch. Their parents don't give them craft or anything like that. So I thought, and they love cheddar cheese. So I thought, well, this is something that they'll really like. And they love pasta. So I went to look this morning, and I discovered that there are things that have been posted very recently on that website. For instance, the mac and cheese recipe is dated July of 2017. So that was certainly not me. And I haven't explored the entire site yet, but there's a lot of material there, I got to say. So if anybody is really curious or interested in some of my old recipes, they can go onto the website, thefoodmaiden.com, and there it is. I don't know, you know, I can't guarantee it's my words or my recipe, but there's stuff there. So
how accurate...
The mac and cheese that's there is not mine.
So how do you make mac and cheese? This I'd love to hear.
Well, this is... Thank you for asking. I'm writing a sort of memoir with recipes, and one of my mentors from the very early days of my career was a woman named Cecily Brownstone. Cecily is not well remembered. Well, even other, they're even better known people are not well remembered, but Cecily was hugely important because she was the food editor of the Associated Press for over 40 years. So for over 40 years, she was the most syndicated food columnist in the country. And her recipes, I mean, I'm sure there are many families who consider some of Cecily's recipes their family recipes. Well, you know, sure, it was, she put them in the paper in the 1940s. And she only wrote one book, and it was a collection of recipes from the Associated Press. And that was, that's called the Associated Press Cookbook. And in that cookbook, she has a recipe called old-fashioned macaroni and cheese. One of the things that you need to make this is a 2-quart bowl that will go in the oven. I just happened to have, I bought a long time ago at a tag sale, I have a nest of ceramic bowls with a cover. And the largest one is a 2-quart bowl. Actually, it'll hold more than 2 quarts, but 2 quarts is its ample. And it's the perfect vessel for this macaroni and cheese because you need to put, she says, a 2-quart round bowl, and then she has you put it in a water bath. I use an 8-inch square pan, Pyrex pan, as my container for the water. And when I put it in the oven, I put the bowl in the empty 8-inch square, and I pour in boiling water around into the square pan. Because, by the way, you try to carry a dish filled with boiling water into the oven. So put it in the oven first and then pour the water in.
Oh, that's smart.
But the recipe is super easy, and it's made in just one bowl, which I love too. So in your 2-quart bowl, you beat together 3 eggs, into which you also beat a teaspoon of Worcestershire sauce. That's the main seasoning. You can be a little creative with the seasoning if you like, and a 1/2 teaspoon of salt. What I mean by creative, you could add a pinch, or if you like things really hot, more than a pinch, of cayenne pepper. You could add black pepper, because the original recipe didn't call for any, and I sort of like macaroni and cheese with a little zing. You could add mustard. You could add dry mustard or prepared mustard. Whatever it is, beat it into the 3 eggs. Then I guess you're not making the entire thing in one bowl, because you need to heat 2 cups of milk, and into that you let melt 1/2 pound of shredded cheese. I use good, well-aged, meaning at least 90-day aged cheddar, but Gruyere is good, real Swiss cheese is excellent. I mean by real Swiss cheese, I mean Emmentaler. I don't mean Finlandia or any of the other Swiss cheese imitators, because they're not nearly as flavorful as Switzerland Swiss. So I've discovered, by the way, it's not easy to find Switzerland Swiss, and it can be expensive. So I think it's actually easier these days to find Gruyere. But whatever it is, cheddar is just fine, and it's the original cheese. And you put the shredded cheese in the hot milk and stir until the cheese is melted. And then you pour that, not boiling hot, of course, just tepid, into the egg yolks, the eggs, not yolks, they're full eggs. And you stir that together. And then you add 1/2 pound of already cooked elbow macaroni. Depends on the brand how long it takes to cook the elbow macaroni, but you don't want it to get soft. You want it to be slightly, as the Italians would say, al dente. Just have a little bit of resistance, because of course it's going to cook in the oven now. So you stir in the macaroni, and then it goes into the oven in the water bath. And the original recipe, as Cecily wrote it, says for an hour. But I find in my oven, I'm going to tell you next time how it worked in my nephew's oven. He's got a, you know, fancy Wolf stove here. I don't know what's going to happen. It could take an hour. In my oven, 55 minutes is the limit for it. You take it out of the oven when the top has gotten a little brown. Oh, nicely browned. And you, by the way, you do not need to butter this bowl. Miraculously, I guess there's enough fat in the cheese. Miraculously, it's very easy to spoon out the mac and cheese when it's all done. So cook it for, I don't know, 55 minutes to an hour. And then I think you should eat it within 10 minutes. So you can put it all together ahead of time, but don't bake it until you're ready to eat it. So tonight, for instance, we're going to eat, the kids like to eat at 6. Well, their parents like them to eat at 6. And the parents will be home by 6. So I'm going to prepare it with Sydney. I'm not sure. Well, she likes to measure things. It's interesting. She's fascinated with measuring things. And immediately yesterday when I told her to do 4-level tablespoons of cornstarch for the chocolate pudding, she knew, and I showed her how to swipe the spoon to make it level. She knew how to do it, and I was amazed. She did it very well for the next 3. So she'll be able to shred some of the cheese, maybe not all, and measure. And certainly she loves to handle a whisk, so she'll be able to whisk together the eggs and the other ingredients that go in. And we're going to have fun.
You know what I saw?
By the way, let me just say one more thing about Cecily. Cecily collected early American cookbooks and was an expert on early American and even colonial food. And her collection of books was donated or sold, I'm not sure, by her nephew when she got. But when Cecily died, she was almost 100 years old. At that point, she needed some money because she had full-time home care. And her nephew sold or donated the books to the NYU Fales Rare Book Collection. In fact, it's sort of the core of the Fales Rare Book Collection. That's what started the cookbook collection. And some other well-known food writers then did similar thing, you know, the same thing, I should say. They either donated or sold their collections to NYU. And now the Fales Rare Book Collection is considered the, after the Vatican, the best cookbook collection in the world.
That's very cool.
So that was all because of Cecily. And Cecily, by the way, was unmarried, childless, a petite woman who looked very mousy, but was anything but. And in fact, she had a little bit of a potty mouth. And one of my favorite stories about Cecily is a potty mouth thing, so I'm not going to tell it here. But she used to call me that young man who cooks, which I'll always remember. And you had something to say?
Yeah, you're talking about the mac and cheese. There's a big fad going around now, which is really ruining mac and cheese. And they take cooked macaroni and cheese, and then they then they put it in egg wash, and they cover it with breadcrumbs, and then they fry it. And to,
I know.
And to me, you know, when you have the crust from baking on top of the macaroni and cheese, that's great. But if you were to, when you fry macaroni and cheese, the grease that must accumulate will just I think it would ruin the taste.
You're getting me sick just thinking about it.
I can't believe it. It's a big thing nowadays.
No, I know. I've seen it too. In fact, I will confess that we go to a hamburger place in Park Slope that for the kids has deep fried mac and cheese. And of course, I was too embarrassed to order it the first couple times I went to this place. But then I said, you know, I have to try this. It was awful. It was really gross. So So I don't know why a parent would feed their child this, but they do. I know why, because the kids like it. They don't know any better. My niece knows better. She's learning this in school. Yesterday, we also made lemonade yesterday because she loves lemonade, and she didn't know how it was made. So I said, oh, we have lots of lemons at home. Well, let's make lemonade. And we made the lemonade, of course, using sugar. And she only drank a little bit of it, and then she said, you know, this has a lot of sugar, and sugar's not good for you. So I'm only going to drink a little bit. That's a four-year-old. But we live in a very strange age when almost everybody, I think, is health conscious, you know, in regard to their food. Whatever things they believe about good eating, they're trying to do it. On the other hand, the food... Oh, wait, I got to say bye. Have a good day at school. I'll see you later. Bye, Maya. Bye. That's the two-year-old, is Maya. She's just beginning to talk. By the way, she can't say Uncle Arthur. She can, but she loves to say Uncle Bob.
Well, Uncle Bob so is easier probably than Uncle Arthur.
It's so much easier, yeah. And so both of us are Uncle Bob.
Okay, that's easy.
We're the generic Uncle Bob.
The Uncle Bobs are coming. Is that, those will be good stories later. So
What's interesting is that one of her friends is named Jedediah. Zachariah. He's Zachariah.
How does Zachariah come out?
Well, let me just say that she loves saying Zachariah because it's her buddy.
Right.
But so she can say Zachariah, but she can't say Arthur. I don't know. It's okay. She'll learn. She's only two. She's only now beginning to talk. And she does say a lot of things that you don't expect her to say, which is cute. So where were we? So we're living in an age where everybody seems to be health conscious, but if you turn on the cooking station or the food station, the Food Network, a lot of what they do is feature hamburgers with all kinds of crap on top.
Unhealthy.
Is a real technical word.
But what's really interesting is, you know, the health and the wellness is being confused. If you wander through any supermarket at this juncture, everything is gluten-free that or gluten-free that. And I just think, you know, people are, in their consciousness, moving away from, and again, none of this applies to people who have an actual condition. I have to emphasize that. But to just snag something because it's gluten-free, thinking that you are doing something to your beneficial is not necessarily...
Let's get the word necessarily out of there. It's not at all healthful. I was talking about this with my niece-in-law, Michelle, who's a doctor. But, you know, doctors don't learn anything about nutrition. It should be the first thing they learn, but they don't learn anything. And only through her four-year-old is she learning about stuff. So now that Sydney is conscious of sugar, Michelle has been looking at packages more and realizing, as I think anybody who reads ingredients on packaged food, is that sugar is in almost everything. Even when it's not necessary, even when it's a savory food, there could be sugar in it. And you know, just in general, I should say that when you read an ingredient list, the ingredients are in the order of prominence in the product. And so if sugar is number two or three or even four on the ingredient list, it's got a lot of sugar. If it's like the last item in the ingredient list, then maybe it's just a tiny bit to balance out some other flavor. But Americans love sweets, and I don't know what's going to happen to wean us away from sweets, but I have trouble even eating out in anything but an old traditional restaurant because even the salad dressing
has
sugar in it.
I know, and what's really fascinating, again, there are certain places and there are certain people who just continue. who continue to emphasize, hey, listen, this is, and we've talked about this before, this is what it's meant to taste like. This is what it's supposed to taste like. Which you cannot see from TV. See, the whole taste component, it's all very visual, and that's great, and you can watch people dumping all sorts of things, but it doesn't trigger anything that says, wow, that's not going to taste. We've spoken before about reading recipes for, quote, comprehension and knowing what something's going to taste like, and it's as if that bit's been divorced from the creation of the bit, the product, and... taste is tricky.
It's complicated.
Yeah.
It's complicated, and also when you're a kid and you're fed a lot of foods that are sweet or have sugar in them, those are the tastes that you want when you're an adult.
Right.
So it really does have to start at infancy to get children accustomed to food that is not sweet. Yes, we all love sweets, and we all want to have sweets, but from time to time or in small amounts, it's fine. But a diet full of sugar is really, really bad. And as Michelle was saying, the doctor, I always thought it was fat that was the culprit, but now I'm finding that it's sugar.
Right, and then it
and salt, too. She's learning, her father's very ill, and he can only eat certain things, and he can't eat this or that. So she's learning, actually, through her father's diet about salt and sugar and blah, 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 and that fat isn't so bad after all. Depends on the fat, of course. So, I've been at this for 50 years now, or close to 50 years. Let's see, 50 years. How many years ago? What year would it be 50 years ago? 1968, okay, 49 years I've been writing about and thinking about and reading about food and nutrition, and I will tell you that nothing has changed in all those years. The best advice is still everything in moderation, really.
Right, pretty much everything real, not synthetic, and in moderation.
Yeah, everything real, right. So when I take people, I do this sometimes, this is sort of funny, but I take people who have to use EBT card, electronic benefits, electronic benefits transfer. That's what EBT is for, electronic benefits transfer. There are no more food stamps. If you get help from the government to supplement your food, it comes in a form of a plastic card, like a credit card. So when you go to the supermarket, and one of the benefits of this is when you go to the supermarket, it doesn't look like you're using food stamps. It just looks like you're using a credit card. So people are less embarrassed. But one of the things I tell people is never buy anything you see advertised on television, except for maybe milk. I haven't seen many commercials for fruit lately or vegetables. But really, if you... just think of that one rule. Don't buy anything advertised on television or anything that comes in a package.
Well, there's the other huge culprit that one has to be quite concerned about, and I don't know what we've got for time, but the is prepared foods. Because...
Well, that's another thing.
That is,
it's
a whole other thing.
You can buy good prepared foods these days.
But you can also buy... Some of the prepared foods that you can buy these days are costly, and you don't know how much salt, sugar, etc. has gone into them, because, as we know, the more that goes in, the better it tastes.
Well, I don't know about the better it tastes, but
quote,
the more
quote.
Addictive that it could be. I have a market in my neighborhood that sells prepared foods. Most of which I totally ignore, but I do buy their rotisserie chickens. I don't feel there's anything bad in their rotisserie chicken, and they use very good chickens. And in the end, it's cheaper than if I bought my good chicken. If I buy my good organic or free-range whatever chicken, it could, for a 3-pound chicken, could cost $12 to $15.
No, you're absolutely right. But what people need
and
to know.
And my roasted chicken only costs $10, and it's convenient. And one chicken will last us at least two meals.
Arthur, my
so
my.
It's very. For two people, two meals, that's four servings for $10, $11. It's very good buy. And then there are other products, and I know they make them. They do a good job. And I'm sure there are plenty of markets that do. Now, my nephew, both he and his wife are doctors, and they work very long hours. And Brian used to come home at 5 o'clock or 5:30 and first have to make dinner. And, you know, and then you feed the kids, and then you're ready to go to bed. It was, put them to bed and you go to bed. It was very difficult. So he discovered there's a caterer here that will send you prepared food. You can every week they change the menu and you order. I think I don't know how it all works, but you order it online and they deliver it to your door. And all that you need to do is reheat it or not reheat it, depending on what it is. And I got to say, it's really good. There was some leftover steak from this caterer in the refrigerator, which I ate for lunch the other day. It was really, really good. I mean,
right. But I don't mind. All I'm saying,
I don't mind eating cold steak, and it came with a very nice, like pesto kind of. It wasn't Italian pesto, but a sauce, like an herb.
Like an herb sauce.
An herb.
Which is yummy.
An herb sauce, chimichurri. Anyway, it was excellent.
It was nothing but steak and a green sauce.
So you can't. There are these things these days, and of course on television you see advertised all the time these various delivery services that send you the ingredients and the recipe, and it makes it. It's all prepped for you. You don't have to do the chopping and slicing. And that's a time saver. And usually those products are very pure.
The point around the prepared is by all means, get it. But, you know, the time saving is great. But you got to still know what the ingredients are. That's all I was saying. Anyhow.
I totally agree.
That was
just read ingredient labels. It's a revelation.
Or ask. What did you put in that?
Or ask. Yeah, but, you know, sometimes the clerks don't know anything. So right. I find that... quite frequent. I say, what do they make that with? I don't know.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, everybody have a great week. It is spring, although here in Philly, there's still snow on the ground. But we walked around the house yesterday, and we saw various signs of spring, including robins and crocuses and snowbells and other signs of spring. So.
Happy spring.
Things are looking up, kids.
Okay. Happy almost birthday.
Take a happy birthday to me.
Yes, happy birthday. Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven, here on Robin Hood Radio. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven from Hathaway Young, located on South Center Street in Millerton, Flawless Catering and Event Planning, HathawayYoung.com. John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Groceries on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, Rubiner's.com. In Hillsdale, New York, Hillsdale Home Chef with two beautiful teaching classes, and they've got classes to go in those cooking rooms. More information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com. And Haven Cafe in Lenox, Massachusetts, offering quality food and excellent service. From a fresh cup of great coffee to healthy, delicious breakfast, or sit down with a dinner with a tasty, life-enhancing meal that you can take home. Also, they feature catering. Supporting local organic farmers, environmentally conscious, and epicurious distributors, havencafebakery.com.